Isaac.
Okay. My name is Pat Bodenshot. Today is April 11th. It is 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm here with...
Alex. Alex Chichinov.
Okay. We're going to start this interview by saying where I said Alex Chichinov. You called Sonny, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so nicknamed Sonny. Your birthplace?
October 7, 1937 in a fog neck.
Okay, Alaska, right. How many people were in your family?
Seven.
Seven?
That was my sisters and brothers. Yeah. Yeah, there's only three of us left, though.
You're right. Okay, your parents, maybe your dad's occupation?
He was a fisherman and cannery worker.
On a fog neck?
No, various canneries around the island. Mostly Port Bailey and Port Wakefield, herring and salmon. He did more herring fishing than salmon.
Hmm. So he's a fisherman too then?
Yeah, basically so, yeah. In his later years, he just worked ashore at the canneries.
Okay. And your mother, she's a homemaker? Right?
Just a homemaker, yes.
Right.
She had her hands full with seven kids.
Yeah, seven kids?
Yeah.
Okay. Your brothers, how many brothers and sisters?
There was five girls and two boys.
Five girls, two boys?
Yeah, and they're just two girls and me left.
The occupations of your siblings?
Both of the sisters are homemakers. The rest of them died at very young ages.
Is that right? Okay. How was the life, you know, you had when you were younger? On a fog neck and wherever you've lived?
Oh, I thought it was nice. It was very free, you know, clean living. Today, in modern day, money is such a big factor. It wasn't back then. You
sure.
Lived pretty much on the land. And when my dad worked, you know, it was just seasonal, so he made plenty for staples that we did need, you know, outside of our wild game.
Yes,
stuff.
Sure. Yeah. So, like, when he'd do the fishing seasonally, and then during the off-season, it'd be... the land would provide wherever you needed.
Yeah, just, you know, basically hunting ducks. Elk have been on a fog neck for quite some time, you know, from the time that I came to. But the deer came a lot later, that they were transplanted here. And he didn't hunt any of that. But and a lot of people in the village had cattle there, so we had access to beef all the time.
Yeah. So you basically, growing up, you got a lot of hunting and fishing in, learned how to do that stuff.
Oh yes, yeah.
Pretty good. But you had a good childhood, man.
Oh yeah, I think so. The only bad part, you know, growing up in a village back then, was problem, you know. Furthering your education, you know, you have to travel away from home, and a lot of children just couldn't do it, you know, or stay away from home that long.
Would he have encouraged you to go off if you could have to learn, or he kind of like was reserved and wanted you to stay closer to home and maybe in following his tracks, do you think?
No, not necessarily. He wanted me to go to school, but I did leave to Sitka.
Did you?
But when we got there, it was a lot different than the real village life. You got away from the village, and money became a factor in your life, and it just wasn't. You didn't need the actual money for studying and so forth, but all the other functions that went with it, you know. Money was a big factor. I went for a while, and then I ran away from school and kind of got off on my own.
Did you? Okay, you're a Alaska native?
Yeah.
Native Indian?
Right, yeah. Of the Aleut Indians.
Aleuts, okay. Do you know any people that are like other Indian groups, like Eskimos, Koyaks?
Yeah, we went to the school in Sitka was a Bureau of Indian Affairs operated school, and there was all the Indians of Alaska there. And I didn't, but a lot of children here also went to Chemawa, Oregon, which was an Indian school.
All the way down there, huh?
Yeah, so we got to associate even with the Indians from the lower 48.
How was that? Different cultures?
Through schooling, basically through school. Not so much did they have like a student exchange back then, but there would be times that some of the Indians from the lower 48 would travel to mainly Sitka then.
Did you find any similarities amongst your cultures? I mean, obviously different regions and so forth, but you're basically the same lineage, as far as Native American, you being up here and then being down there, but still, would you find any similarities?
Oh, somewhat so. Basically, in your style of living and eating, were
probably
similar.
Yeah, probably the factor like the money. Money wasn't really
it wasn't a big factor. I don't know really how all the lower 48 Indians really got by, but up here, money wasn't that large a factor. Like my dad, when he worked, whether it be working in the cannery or fishing, he would buy enough supplies to last us through the winter till his next season came. And like the rest of the stuff was just whatever he hunted, or like in Alaska they say when the tide is off, the table is set.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of seafood too, put a lot of seafood up for winter. And I just can't say for sure that the difference with the lower 48 American Indian and the Alaska Native Indian.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving on. Now we talked about earlier, tape recorder wasn't on, but life for the Native has changed since the time you were younger versus now. Go ahead and just talk about
quite
that.
A bit, so it's changed. The Alaska Native land claims, which came into effect in 1971, has changed it in a whole lot. Then you had, or after the Alaska Native land claims came in, then there was, in each village there was a HUD housing came in and gave everyone new homes and so forth. Before all this, your social life in the villages was basically visiting one another there. Now it's they don't hardly visit one another. It's just too modernized. There's TV, telephones. It's basically like living in the outskirts of a large city anymore.
So the visiting your neighbor was a form of recreation, kind of.
Yeah,
like?
Absolutely. So that was the only other thing they had, starting I believe in the 40s sometimes, was the radio, and that was strictly by battery, a dry pack battery. And back then it was very hard to for the supplies for the stores in the villages, you know, to get their freight shipped in, and a lot of times you'd go several months in the winter without being able to obtain another battery for your radio to keep up with the rest of the world.
Okay. You were here during the war, but young, huh?
Yeah, I vaguely remember the war in the 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It affected you at all?
No.
Your dad, maybe?
Enjoyed when they'd have the air raids and stuff.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Everybody'd be scrambling for, I don't know why, but everyone in the village of a Frognack, most people had tents pitched for just for that purpose in the forest there. Just where the actual villages and the houses were, you know, was very visible from the ocean. There was planes back then, but I don't think they were such a big factor as the ships were. But I don't ever recall seeing any, but I do remember several times when they have what they call the air raid, you know, they would come over the shortwave radio and tell people to take cover or put your shutters on your windows so no light was
visible.
Yeah.
Huh.
And I kind of enjoyed it. It was just like going out and camping.
Oh, yeah?
It bothered me a bit.
Huh. That's funny. They have blackouts quite a bit?
Yeah, it was, you know, the one year there that I can remember, there was quite a few. And it was quite a lot different in the summertime when the menfolk were gone. It would be several families would get together because it was basically women and children. And that was when I thought it was a lot more fun because you were with your buddies and stuff and able to spend the night out.
Oh, yeah. Kind of like a Boy Scout type of thing, huh?
You're right.
Overnight camp out. And had you been to Kodiak? Was it a city back then? I mean, it wasn't all.
Well, it was classified as a city, but it's small.
Yeah. Small. Now, did you come back and forth a lot? Or?
No, very, very little. In our childhood, yeah. After I got in my teens, I would travel between Kodiak and Frognack quite a bit. But as a child, no. The only time that our parents would come in would be either for sickness or shop for groceries. And my dad, a lot of times in the fall, when we changed from the wood stove to an oil burning stove, why August and September would be when he'd buy the bulk of his oil for the winter months. But it was always a big treat to us children because we got a lot of stuff that wasn't available in the villages, as you know, fresh fruit, and of course it was always a bag or two of candy for us children too.
Yeah.
So it made it quite nice.
Huh. You come over by boat, right?
Yes. Yeah.
How long is that trip?
It's approximately 3 hours.
Is that right? All right. Now, your occupation is?
I'm a fisherman.
But
we own our own boat.
Own your own boat. You started fishing professionally when?
That's all I'd ever done. I fished on deck from the time I was 13, and then I started mastering my own boat when I was 20 years old. Been doing it ever since then.
So that's the only job you've ever known, huh?
That's right.
Okay, and you own your own boat, right?
Yes.
How long have you owned your own boat?
Well, the present one we have now is 14 years. Was 14 years old in February.
Okay, so you'd have to look at it and say, well, it was somewhat profitable because you started with probably nothing, and now you have your own boat.
Mm-hmm.
So during that time, from when you're, let's say, 15 to 20, when you got the skill level up, and then to you know, sometime you have a boat. So that during that time it was profitable, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So yes, I don't salmon fish anymore, but when I quit salmon fishing, we weren't selling by the pound. It was by the fish, so much per salmon. And different species were, you know, different price, but the bulk of it was the pink salmon here. And I think when I quit 16 years ago, it was a lot better than it is today. At 12 cents a pound, I believe that's what it was last year, or even 15 cents. If you had 100,000 pounds, that's only $15,000. I believe the last year that I fished, it was like 45 cents a fish. And, you know,
that's a lot.
That was better than it is right now, but I've seen where, you know, early 80s and
that for pinks or reds? 45 cents?
That was for pinks. Wow. About 15 years ago, I guess. But in the early 80s, I see, you know, where they were getting a fair price, like 45 cents a pound would be, you'd get over $1 a salmon. Mm-hmm. Because a pink salmon runs probably 3.5 pound average.
Okay, this is the next question, is gonna tie into what we were just talking about. How do you describe your life as a fisherman? Well, first of all, let's back up. The process of growing up, all of a sudden you're fishing at a young age. Was it kind of destined? You're kind of destined to be a fisherman. You went to school a little bit in Sitka, but your fisherman was basically what you were doing. So that kind of just carried into your teenage years, and then 20 year old, you're a master. You said.
Yeah. Well, it didn't happen with all native children. Some of them wanted to be something else, you know. I just loved it from the very first time I did it. And that was my life's dream, is to get my own boat. Like my dad, he didn't have his own fishing boat, and he didn't want me to do it when I did start. But it was my life's dream, and once I got in there at 20 years old, I just took off and did real well for quite some time.
Your dad didn't want you to do it because danger?
Well, yeah, it's quite a dangerous,
sure,
occupation. And
I think they classify it as the most dangerous,
yeah,
occupation.
And I, of course, you know, young then, I was gung-ho to go. You know, I didn't, weather wasn't not much of a problem for me. I worked in quite rough weather. But it was just, being the only boy in his family, he just was very, very nervous about it.
Hmm. Okay, so now your life as a fisherman, you know, take a break.
No, go ahead.
Your life as a fisherman, obviously, has been pretty good for you. So can you describe how it's provided for you and your family, and, you know, has it done pretty good for you and so forth?
Well, it's like, probably like farming. It's got its ups and downs. By the overall, yes, it was good. Now, it's the past few years here, of course, we've lost our king crab fishery. That was always real good to us. But here in the late 80s and now the 90s, it's really hard to make a living on a smaller boat. Mine is, you know, a 51 footer. You're just hampered by the seasons being so short, and weather, you know, is your major factor in it. Our halibut openings have been 24 hours, and the way, when you have an opening like that, you're forced to go,
yeah,
you know,
no
regardless
what.
Of what the weather
right.
is. And it just makes your occupation that much more dangerous, on especially your early opening.
Mm-hmm.
When I say early, I mean April, May.
Yeah.
Our weather doesn't get that much better in June, July, and August, but it gets somewhat better.
Yeah. It's tolerable, kind of. The, let's see, okay. Now let's go, your wife's name?
Catherine.
And she too is a native, right?
Yes.
A value?
Yes, we're the same tribe.
Okay, where is she from?
She's from Carlin Village.
Oh yeah?
Her dad was a reader in the Russian Orthodox Church, and was asked to relocate in the village of Yuzinki, and that was where I'd met her.
So you met her in Yuzinki, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. How far is Yuzinki from Afagnac?
In miles, probably 12 nautical miles.
Just around the...
Yeah, it's just north of Yuzinki. Takes a little over an hour by boat to go between two villages.
Okay, and you have how many kids?
We have 7 also.
How many boys and girls?
We have 4 girls and 3 boys.
Okay. Some of your boys are fishermen, is that right?
2 of them, the oldest and the youngest. The middle one is a butcher, meat butcher at the court, working for crafts now.
And the other ones are fishermen, they follow in your foot track, that's what you're concerned.
Yeah, they're both of them are. They don't have their own boats or anything, but they work on deck on several different boats here.
Any of them work with you?
No. Well, on some occasions, yes. The oldest one was with me for a while during the cod, pot fishing for cod, which is closed March. And the younger one usually goes with me on halibut or tanner, but he didn't do the tanners with me this year.
Okay. Let's see. Let's talk about some similarities in your childhood to your children's childhood.
Huh.
Very few.
Huh?
Very few.
Yeah, you know, the only similarity in the childhood is that the boys, all 3 of them, did take to fishing at one time. The middle one's married and he's got 5 children now.
Yeah,
and he's quite a family man. He's, you know, involved with sports and in sports with his children. Also coaches for the children here at the school. The only other similarity would be that they took to the fishing. The rest of it pretty much different than mine.
Were they all born in Kodiak?
Yes.
So they've all grown up here?
Yeah.
Went to the high school here, everything?
Yeah, all of them finished school here in Kodiak. The oldest one was born when we lived in Afagnac. But we moved here in 1960, so he would just kike and became a school age here after we moved to Kodiak.
Mm-hmm. How about some major differences? Any major differences? Obviously, there's quite a few, but you grew up in a smaller community where money wasn't too much of a consideration. Now, your kids are going up there. It's more of like you described it as a town on the outskirts of a big city. So your kids growing up in a town on the outskirts of a big city, they have more, right? They have more.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So automobiles, especially. growing up here in Kodiak, and then sports was another thing that, you know, they had access to, where in the village you sports was at a minimum. It just wasn't hardly in the schools.
Do you boys take to sports pretty good?
All of them were. The youngest one, the two older ones were heavy at the sports in school. The youngest one wasn't so much.
Now, you not really doing that is when you're younger. I know my dad, he did it when he was younger, so he, you know, kind of took me and my brothers and made it, you know, not made us, but let us get into sports. Mm-hmm. Were you kind of hesitant when they wanted to say, hey, Dad, I want to do wrestling or I want to do this? Were you like, well, I don't know, you know, or...
No, absolutely not. I thought it was good for them. Even now at I have grandchildren, and they're becoming quite involved in it. And I encourage them, but sometimes on the middle boy, he's so involved with his children now that I think that's all he breeds is sports.
Oh yeah, what West wrestling or what?
Wrestling and basketball.
Basketball.
Yeah, that's basketball basically. Well, a little league too, softball, I guess you call it.
Huh. It's interesting. Okay. Now, when the tape recorder was off, you talked about the native land claims and all that, and you feel that those were good, bad. Certain people did certain things, so forth.
It had its good points, but on the other hand, I'm proud that I'm of Native descent, but to have everything given to us, I think we should labor for some of our stuff we get in life. And first of all, they gave us $900 million, and then we had X number of acres of land. Then pretty soon they come and they start building houses in the villages. Why? I guess that would be fine, but I think when you do stuff like that to people, then you take away, I guess there'd be their initiative to go out there and work for themselves. I would like to be buying my house, or when I bought it, I'd like to pay $80 a month for one that was brand new, and mine wasn't, you know, but that's pretty hard to beat, today's day and age.
Sure, things are given to you.
Yeah, you know, I see that maybe not so much as a native land claims, but as another, I guess you'd call it a gift to them. I just think some of the people just took advantage of it and are still so doing.
So you see it as still going on today, huh?
Yeah, absolutely so. You know, after the Alaska Native land claims, why would all that money distributed between the 13 regions and the numerous villages, why I would say that 80% of them are almost defunct now. Poor management. The group that I belong to is prospering quite well.
Which group is that?
I belong to Natives of Kodiak.
So, life for most natives nowadays is good, fair.
Well, I would say good.
Good,
yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Because of that, what you just stated, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, a little, real quick. How has the fishing industry, that's your industry, changed over the years? Now you talked about it a little bit, if you wanted to elaborate a little more.
Well, it just It's just basically the seasons. I guess one of the things, you know, it's such a free enterprise in the United States that, and I have absolutely no qualms about anybody getting into it, but it just got overcrowded. So, and if you set 10 people down for one pie, the more people you're going to feed out of there, the smaller the piece is going to get. And that's just happened in our fisheries. It just overworked anymore. Yeah. And I kind of hate to say it like this, but with the trawling and coming in now, and they're all on really large ships, a lot of them are from the East Coast and the lower 48 on the West Coast, and the only reason they're up in Alaska doing it is because they totally depleted them areas, and this is the last place on the globe to do it. And the way that I see it now, it's going to continue until it's gone, along with the overabundance of fishermen. Why, I just don't see how it could ever hold up.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay, the earthquake, you were here in Kodiak for that?
Yeah, I was living here with my family at the time. And I don't think I'd ever wish one like that on anyone. It was a scary experience. I've always heard my parents talk about feeling earthquakes. I've never felt one until the 1964. And believe me, it was strong. I just had no idea what was going on.
Uh-huh. What were you doing? Do you remember?
I was in one of the clothing stores at the time that it struck.
Downtown?
Yeah. It's no longer in use, that store, but the building is housing the American Legion, and I believe there's a children's arcade in there or something.
Okay.
But it was so intense, you know, the waves in the ground. I'm just like waves in the ocean rolling through the ground here, probably 3 feet high. And I come out of that store and I tried running up home. I at that time I lived right above where the Westmark is now. You couldn't even begin to run in it. It was just impossible.
I was in an earthquake in California, and I was in my house, and I just woke up, and I was going right for school, and started going, and I was right there. I had to walk out one door and turn left and go maybe 10 feet, and I'd be at the front door of my house. And I tried to move that distance, and I finally got outside, and it stopped. Well, then I stepped outside, and I was watching it, and started again. And I tried to back up even further from the house, but there was nothing that could follow me. And I just remember I could not even move because the ground was moving, you know, and I was trying to, it was just like walking in just quicksand or something. You know?
Really, yeah. It's terrible. I felt several since the 64 one, but nothing like that, you know. That one was so strong that I believe it caused a tsunami in Eureka or Crescent City in California.
Yeah.
One of the two.
It reached that far, I think.
Yeah.
And the tsunami came here too.
Right. Yeah. It was.
Did they warn you about that?
Yeah. We not a whole lot of time, but you know, we probably had 40 minutes or something warning, 30 something like that. It wasn't very long.
And was your house above the west?
It did. The house that we had at the time, it didn't get, wasn't nowhere near the wall, you know. Or the tidal wave didn't get nowhere near it. And what we've had since we've been here now in this house, we've had several times of, we had tidal wave warnings, you know, but none of them have ever occurred. After the 64 one, I think one of them had the tides were goofed up, you know, where it in and out, but it never actually came in as a wave.
Uh-huh. Now the one that, do you remember it coming in as a wave?
Well, I didn't see it. No, we were advised to go to higher ground and not knowing, you know, anything. And I was scared to begin, but I guess, you know, when they told us to get to higher ground, I got my family. We actually ended up at the White Alice Station on top of Pillar Mountain.
Did, now was your wife home with the kids and so forth in the earthquake?
Yeah, well, that was one other bad part of it. She had just gotten out of the hospital with one of our children that day. She had just given birth, I think, 3 days before. And it was rather hard moving her and a new baby around like that.
Sure. Anything happened to your house structurally?
No, absolutely nothing. In fact, we didn't have forced air heat or baseboard heat. We just had an oil cook stove and another oil heater for heat. So when we got back home, there was no electricity. We didn't need no electricity to burn them. So when we came down the following day, our house was just as cozy as can be. The only thing we didn't have was electricity for a while.
All right. The last question I'll ask you is, how has Kodiak changed since you came here?
Oh, it's...
Other than the obvious, you know.
The obvious, I guess, would be it's grown a lot. I don't see any other changes really, except more canneries, more shopping facilities. But no matter how you look at it, it's still a little fishing community.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else you want to add?
I can't think of anything.
You sure? All right. That's pretty much it. And
go ahead.
Turn it off.